Hello and welcome to the Music Survival Guide, the independent musician's guide on how to survive the music industry. My name's Phil, mixing and mastering engineer. Hope you're doing marvellously well. The year's sort of ticking on by, isn't it? We're getting close to a quarter of the way through, which is a bit mad. As it happens, as of release, I am frantically rehearsing as much as possible because I am standing in once again, I don't know what it was before, on bass for a band called One Last Day. So I'll be playing this Friday at the Fighting Cocks. So come if you can, but that's not really what I'm here to talk about. This week on the podcast, I got an interview with George Twidell. So he's a guitar teacher, as well as being in a band called the Crooked Shapes. We talk about all sorts of things around the world of guitar teaching and being in a band and all that kind of side of things. We discuss things like how he got into teaching in the first place, what teaching as a career is actually like, you know, is it enjoyable, that kind of thing, and how close to death he came with a really quite dodgy and alarming amp fix. So there we go. I'm just going to stop talking and say on with the interview. So today on the podcast, I am chatting with George Twidell. George, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. How are you?
I'm good. Got a cup of tea. All good.
Very good. I've just had my coffee. So, you know, I try to limit myself. Otherwise, I'd be bouncing off the walls.
I've had a coffee already. So, you know, this is me doubling up. Anyway, my first question, as always, is from an online random question generator. So the question for you today is a bit of a strange one, at least I think it is. How would you rate your culinary skills? Can't say the word.
Do you know what? It's probably a very typical answer, but I'm very good at what I know how to do, but I don't know how to do a lot. So for example, I could do a very, very good fried breakfast. I could do a really good carbonara. I'm quite good at doing bolognese. I've done a few other things, but I'm still very limited in my palate. I'm actually, I got a bit more motivated into getting into it after watching the James May cooking shows on Amazon, and I've got his book because I find them very easy to follow. I can do a decent steak and chips as well. So
that's a good, yeah. That's a good show. I mean, I'm terrible. I'm really terrible. Like, my wife can just look at a cupboard and go, cool, we've got these things. I'm just going to magic up a meal. And I look at a cupboard and go, there's some ingredients. I need a rest.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't, like, know how to do much, but those things I can do. And I can do, like, a few kind of throw-together things, like some salmon and rice and vegetables, just, like, you know, generally healthy sort of stuff to kind of keep me going if I'm on my own sort of thing. But yeah,
offset the steak and chips.
Instead of steak and chips, no, I can't. It's a more of an occasional thing now, but yeah, but I do love it. Oh yeah, man, it's the best. It's my favorite, like, so
it is good. Food for thought. Well, hopefully food for food. So on to more relevant questions, I guess. How did you get into music in the first place?
How did I get into music in the first place? Do you know what, It's something that's quite interesting because I never like thought I'd ever be a musician until, and it was a very kind of flick moment that where it came about. I mean, I started getting into music because my dad played guitar in a band when in the 80s. So we've always had guitars around the house. And then my sister started getting into music, not playing it, but like listening to it. And I've got two older sisters, and the oldest one was into like sort of heavy rock and stuff like that, and metal. And I started getting into like Metallica, and I remember watching, like going in, our TV room where she would be watching sort of like Kerrang and Scuzz, and there'd be like Slipknot music videos on there. I think one of the first music videos I remember seeing was, I know it's like an album people don't particularly rate, but Saint Anger by Metallica. And, I wouldn't say I'm a massive fan of the whole album, but I do have a bit of a soft spot for the actual song Saint Anger. I think it's pretty awesome, actually. And
except for the snare drum.
Yeah, except for the snare drum. But do you know what? On another side of it, I don't think the album would sound as good, or that song would sound as good if the snare drum didn't sound like a tin can, because it adds an element of just pure rage and raw aggression to it, which... It controversial view or no, but I actually quite like it. It's one of those situations where no, it doesn't technically sound good, but in the context of this alone, I actually quite like it. But that's just me. Like, I've listened to
that's fighting talk.
I've listened to versions of people like say, "Oh, here's Saint Anger with the right snare sound," and I'm thinking, yeah, but it actually sounds like it's lost something. But, you know, that's me.
Cool. So you older, so your dad was in a band in the 80s. That's pretty
Yeah, cool. Nothing like massive, but like he enjoyed playing, he gigged and stuff like that. But then getting into actual playing music, I was in my very early teens. I remember sitting down watching videos on YouTube and I just saw someone playing something on YouTube. I thought, I just want to be able to do that. And, you know, I tried to pick up guitar in my very like young primary school days, but it never really went anywhere because, to be honest, like I didn't really have much confidence as a kid. I didn't really, you know, I didn't have very much like expectations of myself. So if I wasn't like good at something immediately, I just immediately wrote it off as something else I wasn't very good at because there wasn't really anything I was that good at apart from like drawing and stuff like that. But I don't know why I suddenly had an urge to pick up the guitar again, but my parents were out of the house and I went up into where the guitar was in the room. And I managed to sort of like see a video of someone explaining how to read guitar tabs, which explained to me, okay, I can start to play this riff by Cradle of Filth, who I was listening to at the time. So, and it started to happen and I managed to make the shape of a power chord. And I thought, oh, that wasn't too bad actually. And then I just persisted. And then what happened was I only played when my parents weren't in. And then I was playing and then my dad came back. My parents came back home and my dad just walked through my bedroom door and he was like, you're playing guitar? And I was like, yeah. And it's like, sounds pretty good. And I was like, oh, okay. Wow. And then it just went on from there really. And it really kind of hit hard and grabbed hold of me. I went after it at school, really, to be honest. Secondary school, I didn't really have much of a great social experience. And again, I had like other issues academically, which I had, but like due to things I didn't understand about myself at the time, such as being dyslexic and stuff like that. When I started to have quite a close bond with we had houses at school and we had house masters, and my house master was into like rock music, and I remember just sometimes sort of like just I quite often take comfort in just sitting in his office during break times and talking to him about music. And then he had an acoustic guitar in there, which I picked up and started playing the intro to Enter Sandman on. And he said, oh, if you keep doing that, you're going to be playing in our charity concert. And I was just like, oh, bugger. I said another word, but I won't say it on here. He semi-forced me to do it, but like it was the best thing ever. And I did it and I was the only person to get people to stand up and clap for me. And people were just shocked because it's like there's this timid kid who no one really had any expectation of just suddenly let out of a cage and going crazy on stage with a guitar playing Metallica after only a few months of playing. I became obsessed with it from then on. And a month later, we had a school social. Like, I'd never been to a school social because I always thought, you know, I don't know how to talk to girls. I don't know how to talk to people in general. Like, I have the social skills of a brick, basically.
I can relate.
Well, I'm talking about when I was 14. I mean, maybe a little bit better now, but
I can still relate.
I thought, oh, what if I sort of like get a few other musicians together and we play a song at the social, and it'd be quite cool. So we went for the old classic Smells Like Teen Spirit. And you know, there's actually a video on YouTube of this, it's findable if you know exactly what to search.
And you're not going to tell us.
If you search Shiplake Year 10 Band, that might pop up. It's a very fuzzed out video, darked out video. But if you hear Smells Like Teen Spirit, that's us. And, you know, a bunch of teenage kids playing playing at a school social, and it was very good fun. So, but that again, that kind of that was another sort of step up in confidence. So music was actually the thing which actually finally gave me some confidence and belief in myself. So that's another reason why it's become so important to me, really. So, because I generally don't know what I would have become if I didn't find it. But yeah, so yeah, that's it, really.
Nice. So how did you get into guitar teaching? What kind of inspired you to go down that line of things?
So it's another thing, something I never thought I'd do. Even when I became a musician, I didn't ever think I'd be a guitar teacher. I didn't think I'd actually enjoy it as well. I mean, my grandma was actually a music teacher. She taught piano and guitar. The one from my dad's side, so the music comes quite strong there. But I think from the other side, my mum's father, I think he played guitar a bit as well. When I finished studying at ACM, the music college, you left at that position. I think, okay, what do I do now? I have to do something and earn money and live life, really. So, I always wanted to do music as like a full-time thing. That was always my number one goal. And I was always very lucky to have my parents' support with that, which has been great. I tried to sort of like on the side do like an office job, which ended up in me basically having a bit of a mental breakdown after about a month, which is, you know, I used to think, oh, how pathetic was that of me? But then if you're just not the sort of person who is cut out for that, then you're not. And you know, don't brag on yourself for struggling with that, even though it seems like about 80% of the world seems to do that in their everyday life and get on with it. It's everybody's different at the end of the day. One of the other things I've always kind of been into is sort of fitness and stuff like that. I've always done sports. You know, I did swimming and stuff like that, and I did martial arts for like 13 years, which I had to stop because it was getting to a point where I couldn't be doing competitions on Sunday mornings after getting back from gigs at like 2 o'clock. So, cause it's just wrecking you. But I was going to the gym as well, and I thought, well, okay, you know, I could try personal training sort of thing. And my sister helped get me on a course where I sort of learned how to do that, really. And I did that for a bit. But there wasn't any like absolute real passion in doing that. Like I enjoy the whole fitness side of life, but it's not my life. It's not the thing that meant to me. And the trouble is, if it's not that, then I don't put my whole heart into it. But then I started thinking, well, if I can effectively teach fitness, which is what this is, then why can't I teach the thing which I actually know more than anything else, which is guitar and music? So I thought, okay, well, I'll look into how I can get going with that. I went to a music shop, I picked up a couple of books which I got recommended to me, which I still use today. And I'd recommend them to anyone who wants to learn a guitar, or any kid, or it's a progressive guitar for young beginners. It's for a book for 5-year-olds, but like it really clearly explains out like the basics of music theory and stuff like that, and it lines everything up in your head of what you need to know at that point in time, which is great. There's a school literally just down the road from where I live, and I went over there just as it was another school when it closed and it opened up as a new school, and I pretty much went over there as soon as it opened up. And I think the oldest year that I was in that school was like 3 or something like that, or 2 at the time, but I managed to get in there, and we got on quite well, the music teacher, and she was like, oh yeah, you know, you could do an after school club, or, you know, I've got a son you can teach. So she basically just threw me in like, yeah, you can start teaching. Great. And I was like, okay, cool. So I was
off we go.
Yeah. It was very much, you know, hit the ground kind of thing. It was great. You know, I was very fortunate that I had that position. So, and then after then, it just kind of became a bit of a building up, because once you start, you know, your name starts going about. And then, you know, after having some help on how to, like, you know, market myself and learning how to talk on the phone, which was something I didn't know how to do, you know, I started practicing talking to, like, I started practicing sort of cold calling schools effectively to try and get in some other schools. So, you know, I'd phone up schools in like Birmingham or something like that. Bear in mind, I'm based down south in Berkshire. You know, and I just called up schools in Birmingham to be like, to talk to them. To, oh, so, you know, how, you know, I can't remember exactly what I was saying, but trying to get in, are they interested in the guitar teacher? And then like, there's some times when I fluffed it all up and I just basically put the phone down, but I thought, well, I'm never going to call them again. So I never know anything. So, but eventually when I started to get more confident with it, started to get on a bit of a roll, I thought, okay, I'll dive in. I'll start doing the schools around here. I must have called about 300 different schools, and I managed to get into one on the other side of town. Yeah, I've been there for about 3 years now. And again, it's just, you know, quite quickly got it filled up. And with a combination of these two schools, my website and Google, which people seem to find, I don't know how they do, but they do. And just word of mouth circulating, it's I've built up, and I must have about, like, I count my pupils by half an hour slots. So some are hour slots, but if I count half an hour slots, then I've got like over 35 pupils, which is great. So it's a, you know, it's possible to make an income from it, basically. So
the really important thing in so many things in life, but especially in this kind of area, is it's about building that reputation, isn't it? It's about kind of getting that good reputation for this person can actually do what they say they can do, and then you can get recommended.
Yeah, I mean, like this, I've done a little bit of advertising, like I've got some like quotes on my Instagram and stuff like that. But to be perfectly honest, like most, it is about 95% of it has come from word of mouth, because that's how it works when you're a sole trader. You know, it's word of mouth, because. And to us, it's like that with a lot of things in the world, you know, even in like a band context, you know, it's very rare you're going to get someone's attention from going up to say, hey, listen to my band. But if someone else tells you to listen to the band, there's a good chance you'll listen to it, because you're hearing it from someone else. It's not like a first-hand kind of reference, if that makes sense. So, you know, that's why I always, you know, it's always, you want to get recommended to people, not try and chase people necessarily. It's a better way to go about it. But yeah.
Makes all the difference, totally. So for those who really haven't thought about music teaching in any way, shape or form, how do you start teaching someone the guitar? Like physically when you're in the room, what does like lesson one look like? How does that work?
So lesson one normally starts off with me just talking about the guitar itself, because the ultimate goal for me is I'm not just teaching how to strum, I'm not just teaching them how to like, oh, strum chords and make sound. I mean, I do want them to do that, but my ultimate goal is to train them to be a musician. So I want to be able to talk to them like a musician and use guitar terminology, because that's kind of the only real way I know how to express how to talk about the guitar. So I start off by literally saying, let's sit the guitar in front of them, saying, these are the strings, these are the notes they're tuned to, and going through rhymes and methods for them to help to remember it. These are tuning pegs. Don't touch them, otherwise you'll break the strings. You know, we'll learn how to tune them in a minute and stuff like that. But, you know, don't let your little brother or sister snap them or something like that. And then this is the sound, how sound comes out from there. Don't dig your hand into it to find a pick, so everybody's going to damage the strings. You know, this is the bridge, this is the, you know, I go through all of those little bits. Or if it's an electric guitar, I talk about the pickups, you know, and stuff like that. So, and then eventually I get them to, you know, I'll say, you know, you have on your guitar hands, you have four fingers and a thumb. You got your pointer finger, which is your first, your middle finger, which is your second, your ring finger, which is your third finger, and your little finger, which is your fourth finger. Like, you have to make everything super obvious, because you got to remember, you're talking to someone, probably, you know, a kid especially, like, it's quite easy for me to talk to someone like a kid because I have the mental age of one. So I know that I need things explained to me in a very, very direct and obvious way. Like, this is a mug, you know, kind of, I'm pointing at a mug. So I just realized I'm not going to do a video on this thing, but you know, it's that kind of direct kind of information. Like, I often find with music teachers at school, they try to talk to you like they already know what you're talking about, if that makes sense. When it's like you're talking to a bunch of kids who have no idea, but you're talking to them like they know what you're talking about. And that's the problem. Like, they can't relate to that. So whereas I talk to them, like, I try to relate it to something I think they will know, which is more of an everyday thing. And, or, you know, starting out, and I just work in the sort of the guitar terminology. So, you know, after talking about that, it's then, okay, let's play a note. So you're going to put your finger number three on fret number three on the high E string. And then they do that, and then they play that note, and then they say, well, that's a G note, you know, and then, you know, then they play a C note. So first finger on the first fret of the B string, that's the C note. And then I use the same shapes to play like a mini G and C chord. Let's say, do you know the difference between a note and a chord? And they either go yes or they go no. And then they explain, well, a chord is basically just more than one note at the same time. And then, so we're going to do that. So play that third finger on the third fret on the high G string, high E string again, sorry. And then I want you to strum from the G string downwards, and it makes a little three note chord. And then, oh, okay, yeah. And then you do the same with the C chord. You know, the first finger on the first fret of the B string, and then you strum the G downwards again, and it makes like a mini C chord. So, and then he kind of, from there on, normally the lesson ends around there, unless they have a bit more time and I show them a few more open chords. But that, I just get them doing that the first one. The next week I start on the book, which literally you just follow a book. Like, it's, you open up the page and you read to them what it says in there, and then you show them how to do it, and then you get them to do it. And it's very kind of straightforward. It's, and then, you know, you get more slick with it. The more you get slick with it, the more familiar you get to the book. You can start to explain things in a slightly different way, or, you know, you can kind of, you just smooth off in it. But for someone starting up, literally just open the book and read what it says in the book to them, and then show them. And it's that simple. And they will go, oh, okay. They'll either get it or they won't get it. If they don't get it, you just explain it to them again until they do get it, or try and think of another way to explain it. Because, you know, if you're a musician, you'll find a way to explain to them what that means. You know, you just have to try a few different angles, and eventually the penny will drop and they'll get it. But the other thing as well is, like, you know, don't, you're going to come across kids who obviously have no idea what you're talking about. And it's nothing against their intelligence. It's just that if they're not musicy kids, then they're not musicy kids. You know, you're not a failure if they're just not that kind of way inclined. It's like, you know, I am not a linguistic person. I am awful at learning languages. I really liked my French teacher at school. He was really cool, but he would be pointing out the words to me on the oral exams when recording, and I'd still be going, I have no idea what that means. I just don't know. And yeah, I've got a friend who can, like, speak four languages, and she just learned them all, like, within the space of a few years, and she just learns languages for fun. I'm thinking, I just have no idea. But then she says the same. She says, like, but I don't get how you do the music. Like, everybody's brain is wired in a certain way. You know, it's not a matter of being more smarter than someone else. It's just different, you know, and that's the world. And I think just being very patient with them at the end of the day, and if they enjoy it, they enjoy it. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, totally. What would you say is the biggest challenge that you've had with being a music teacher?
Parents. to be honest, it's parents. Most of them are fine. Most of them are absolutely fine. But some of them just, you know, it's the influence they have on their kids, and this sort of I'm trying to think of my words very carefully right now. You do sometimes get kids who are just like little, you know, what's it, to so to say. And but that's a rare occasion. But to be honest, most of the time when that happens, there's always an explanation for it. Like I very rarely needed to raise my voice in front of a kid, and I try to reserve that because I've been told many times by my family that I have quite a loud, growly voice, and if I pump it up, then it's quite scary to kids and stuff like that. So I try not to do that. And if I raise my voice a bit more, I try to, you know, so it means a bit more, if that makes sense, rather than running on 10 all the time. So, I was just saying, like, parents who've, they make their kids do it for like no other reason other than they think it makes them smarter. And it's like, if this kid doesn't want to do it, then they don't want to do it. Like, I've had kids who, parents who've wanted me to teach them classical guitar. And, I've been talking to the kid in the lesson and be like, do you actually like classical music? And he goes, no. Do you actually care about classical music? No. Do you even want to do this? No. And I'd be like, okay, how would we feel about doing something else then? Like, you know, trying to get them onto the more, but the parents are like, but you know, they seem to have this like mentality that like, oh, well, that, you know, really music and classical music, and you know, it's like kind of, that's what you do at school kind of thing. And I'm thinking, yeah, this isn't 1970, mate. It's, you know, I love classical music, but I got into it through metal music. I got through it through Randy Rhoads, you know, and that's what inspired me. I found my looks when I had something that when I had someone who I was inspired by, who I could relate to it through. And then that's where my interest in it came from. And the same with jazz music, you know, all those kind of things. But unless you have like something you actually are someone you inspired by who has an investment in that, then it means nothing to them. And that's why I don't understand why schools teach kids about all these like classical music and stuff, because they just don't care. None of them care. Maybe one of them does out of the whole school, but none of them care. And I can guarantee them, and if there's any music teachers at school listening to this, they don't care. Change the curriculum and make it more interesting. Talk to them about actual modern day pop music. You know, they will find it more fun and actually be more inspired. And I don't care how blunt I am sounding. It's just the truth. Anyway.
Wow, touched on a raw nerve there.
Mate, it's just something I get really griped about, because I see these kids and I see how lack of motivation. And I actually ask some of the kids, the older kids, the teenage kids I teach, and I say, "What's your favourite lesson at school? What's your least favourite lesson at school?" And some of them say it's music, and I'm thinking, "Oh, what are you doing here then?" Kind of thing. And they say, "Well, no, it's not that I don't like music. It's like, you know, a thing. It's just that the school lessons are really, really boring. Like, the music teacher is really boring and we don't learn anything interesting in it. It's just stuff that they don't care about." So, and I'm thinking, yeah, that's like, you know, and the trouble is with a lot of kids, that's the only music education that they're getting in their life. And so that's the whole perception of it, like boring, kind of sniffly kind of classical music teacher who kind of looks down on anything rocky or less sophisticated. And I'm thinking, bugger off, you know.
I absolutely hated my music lessons, probably for very similar reasons Dalton described. The absolute highlight of a music lesson was when we got the keyboards out and someone could press the DJ button. I won't lie to you, that was
yeah, or the dog button, like that.
that was the top tier of music lesson.
Yeah. But parents can be problematic when the trouble is a lot of kids do so much these days. They do so much. Every day they're doing a club. And because of that, they don't have any time to practice. And then the parents sort of like, they're not really getting any better. And I'm thinking, yeah, are they practicing? Oh, well, you know, we did a little bit yesterday. And I'm thinking, yeah, you need to be doing a little bit every day. You know, and if you're struggling to find a time, you need to make the time. Or, you know, you need to decide, is it worth doing this, or are you going to drop something to give a bit more time for this? But ultimately, it's that really. And then the only kids who have had problems with being like little issues have been kids whose parents I've noticed don't really understand the concept of disciplining their kid. And, you know, I've had kids who have been quite challenging, like quite, yeah. And, but their parents are like basically like, or one of them anyway, is very much a kind of pushover kind of thing. And I'm thinking, yeah, there's a reason why they kind of probably are like this, and like trying to get them to change a technique, and they just will not accept that what they're doing is not right. And then they'll have this meltdown, because what I'm trying to show them to help them improve is a little bit difficult. Yeah. Oh, and the only other challenge I've had with kids is, and this isn't necessarily anything to do with the fault of the parents or even actually to do with the kid, it's just because of their experience in life growing up so far, is academic kids who are very, very smart academically. They're top of the class in the reading and maths and all that sort of stuff. And then they start music and then it's not easy, and they have never experienced something which isn't easy before, and they don't know how to handle it, and they do struggle with that. So, but the only thing you can do is just try to find some sort of analogy to explain to, you know, someone of that age that, you know, this isn't easy. It's not easy for anybody. You just have to be really patient with yourself. And then most of the time the parents are actually like, yeah, he needs to learn this, or she needs to learn this, or, but occasionally I've had the parent who's just a bit like, but they're really smart at English. And I'm thinking, that's nothing to do with music, mate. Like, it's a very different kind of situation. Or I think the funniest one I had quite recently was a parent who messaged me saying, I'm interested in having guitar lessons, on my son having guitar lessons, but I don't actually want to buy a guitar for him until I know he can actually play it. And I'm thinking, wait, let me just make sure you actually said this said what I think you said. So you don't want to buy a guitar for him until you can get a lesson slot and play it, or you don't want to buy a guitar for him unless you realize he can actually like have the ability to play it? I said, oh no, it's till I know he has the ability to play it. And I'm thinking, yeah, that he needs to practice in, you need to practice in the week. So you need a guitar. Absolutely essential. It doesn't matter what your future potential is. If you're not playing guitar in a week, you're not going to get anywhere. It doesn't matter how much potential, you know, it doesn't matter how smart your kid is. If they're not going to practice in the week, they're getting nowhere, because they will forget everything they did in the week before. And then they'll come to you the next week and they'll look at you like in confusion, just like, what am I supposed to do? And yeah, so big rambles. I hope these answers aren't too long.
That's fine. No, I like it. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, that thinking about kind of first instruments, guitars especially today are so, like, beginner guitars are so much better than when we were younger. Like my first instrument, because I play bass, not very well, but I play it. My first instrument was like a jazz bass copy that cost about 70 quid, and it was absolute trash. It was awful. I mean, just the stuff available today for cheap is unbelievable in comparison.
Oh, bloody hell.
I'm just amazed.
Yeah, no, it's, and you get good electric guitars as well. Like, you know, there's, I mean, there's a few websites which are a bit dodgy. Don't be fooled by the extreme cheap prices of them, because I've dealt with some of them before and they just fall apart. But like the Fender guitars, the Fender, not three quarter size Fender guitars, they're good. Like, you know, they're never going to be perfect, but they're good. And yeah, the mini Epiphone guitars, I mean, are quite expensive. They're on a higher end, but they are good guitars. Like, they're, I mean, being like 8 years old and having like a mini SG is like the most cool thing ever, or like a mini Les Paul or something like that is, you know, whereas...
It's inspiring, which is half the challenge, isn't
exactly,
it?
Yeah, you know. And I think that's the thing with like being music with kids, it's like, how can you make it inspiring to them? Like, I try to lean into a bit of an image with them, you know. I've got the long hair, and you know, I go into school wearing a leather jacket, sometimes wearing my sunglasses. I try to look like this image of a, oh, he's a cool guitar teacher kind of thing. And it's fun. you know, because that's what I want it to be. I want it to be fun. Because the only memory I have of music teachers at school were they looked like the most boring people in the world. And I'm thinking, what is inspiring about something which when I look at, I just imagine the colour brown or grey?
Yeah. So what would you say is like the most rewarding thing about being a teacher? If it's like a moment or a general thing, what is that?
I think it's just when you know they enjoy it, really. I mean, I've had some really nice emails from parents. Like actually one quite recently, a kid who's, he struggles a bit with like social anxiety and stuff. And then he played a song in front of his class from the syllabus book I teach. And, you know, he did really well and his classmates loved it. And yeah, he was... You know, and it's just stuff like that. It motivates them. And when they get the grades and they're really pleased with themselves, you know, because they're just like, the first time they do it, they're so nervous because they're thinking, oh, no, it's a test and it's an exam. But I tell them I wouldn't put them in there if I didn't know they'd pass. You know, and I've had a 100% pass rate so far for all of my pupils. And I've taught a lot of kids now. And because I don't tell them to do it, I don't get them lined up to do it unless I know they're going to do it, unless I know they're going to pass. Because the last thing I want them to do is to fail it and for them to just be completely destroyed. There's only been a couple of situations where I've been accepting of if they fail or not. And that's some kids who I've taught who are a bit older and they get a little bit kind of lazy and stuff like, you know, typical teenager kind of attitude. And a few of them haven't practiced when their exam's coming up. And I've been like, look, mate, you're the one who's going to fail this exam. Like, it's going to be rubbing off on you, man. Like, you know, so, you know, and it's your parents are going to be bummed out. You know, I can only show you this. I know you can do it, but if you're not going to practice, you ain't going to pass. And then you're going to have that on you. And they're like, oh okay. And that kind of kicks them into gear a bit more. So I rarely get like, I try to not get, you must practice kind of like, you know, digging it in them. I just tell them that you're going to be the one losing out kind of thing if you don't, and try to make it think of it from that angle. Because if they realize that they're the ones who are going to look stupid, then it actually kicks them up the arse a bit more.
So what piece of advice would you give for someone who's maybe thinking about this as a career path? Maybe they're in a band and they want to do music full time in some way, shape or form, and this looks like a good option. What advice would you give?
Just go for it, to be honest. I try not to overthink that one too much. I've answered loads of long questions, but that's all I can say. Just go for it. I mean, there isn't really much else to say. It's a good way to earn money. And if you want to do music full time, you're going to struggle to do that being in a band, because there isn't money in the industry, in the original band industry anymore, unless you're, you know, you can do session work. You can try and get in that way. That's another thing. You can do function gigs, get in a wedding band, do that. That's another option if that's what you want to do. All of these are fine, but if you don't want to do them, but you still want to earn money, why not give teaching a go? I didn't think it would be something I'd enjoy, but I actually do. You're always going to be faced with challenges, but you get faced with challenges for everything. But ultimately, I do enjoy it. And even if I got to a point where I don't essentially have to teach anymore, I'd still keep some peoples on to do it because I like it. I like inspiring them and it's fun, you know. And there are some kids who I generally really enjoy teaching. And, you know, it's nice now. There's a few kids doing their music GCSE and I'm helping them explain things to them, which there's been some times when, like, something really nice, actually, speaking of a rewarding thing that happened quite recently was one of the girls I teach, she came to me saying, I got asked this question in my music lesson at school, and I just walked into the classroom, my teacher asked it to me, and no one else knew the answer, but because of what you told me the other week, I knew the answer to it. And I was like, that's awesome, like, I love that, you know. It's like I helped her understand something, and you know, something which a music teacher probably didn't expect her to know because of the fact that no one else in her class knew it. And that was awesome because I feel like that was probably a bit of like a shocker moment for their music teacher, if that makes sense. Not in a bad way, but in like a oh wow, like where did you know that from kind of thing. And it's nice to know that I was the one to help her understand that sort of thing. You know, other things, like, you know, you do get some. you know, speaking of, you know, the girls playing guitar and stuff like that, you know, it's another hot topic at the moment, trying to, especially as it's International Women's Day at the moment, isn't it?
As of day of recording.
On the day of recording, yeah. No, it's, I mean, she's quite, this particular girl, she's in year nine now, so but they start their GCSE for music in year nine for some reason, but she's quite self-conscious about being the only, like, girl electric guitarist in her class, and I'm just thinking, no, that's cool, like, you should be proud of that, like, you know, that's something really cool, so take it, you know, just, you know, if don't let anybody kind of, like, make you think, if you want to play electric guitar, do it, like, you know, it's, no, you don't. Yeah, I just told her, like, how cool I thought it was she doing it, and she was a bit more like, oh no, yeah, it kind of helps them, you know. So you just, you know, it's. I always try to talk about music and encourage them and show them other, like, you know, I showed her, like, other girl guitarists, or should I say guitarists who happen to be girls, even, like, there's Joanne Shaw Taylor and whatnot, and whatnot, and she's a friggin' awesome guitarist, and, like, you know, she and they're like, oh, okay, yeah, cool, you know, there are guitarists who happen to be girls out there who are really good, and it's like, yeah, exactly, you know, if you're always gonna get people who are, like, assholes, but you just have to basically tell them to F off.
Indeed. How very PG of you, aren't
they? Yeah.
<For the podcast>.
Yeah.
So, moving kind of away from music teaching a bit, I guess. So you mentioned that you know, you've been in some bands, you've got your current band, Crooked Shapes, and things like that. Have you had any, like, nightmare experience gigs? This is my favourite question to ask people, where everything's gone wrong. Have you had anything like that? Feel free to not name people as appropriate if you want to keep relationships.
I mean, no, I mean, like, if we've had a few gigs where, there's a couple of gigs that spring to mind where, we've had gigs where I've lost my temper and done some stupid crap. Like, there's a place relatively local to where we are where, I can't remember what the situation was, but I was particularly fired up and quite anxious on that day. I think the organization of the gig was really, really bad, and someone else was really annoying me, and something happened and I just lost my temper, and I think I threw, like, a bucket of paint across that happened to be in, like, this kitchen area, and then I was like, it was really, really stupid of me, we went back the next day. I went back the next day and cleaned it up. So, you know, so I learned my lesson from that, you know. I try to, like, defend my actions. I'm not justifying my actions for doing that. It was stupid, but there's a reason why I get in that state of mind, and it's because a series of events are happening where I'm struggling to kind of process everything at once, and it ends in this kind of explosion, and that's another side of my life which I've had to deal with, you know. I was mentioning before about struggling with social issues at school and stuff like that, and a lot of bullying involved, and my way of sort of just dealing with my bullying back then was just to, having been bullied even, was just literally just blocking everything out and bottling all up, and there's only so much you can do that until you explode, and that's what happened a lot. It's a reason why I kind of struggle to kind of process kind of stress and emotions like that. And I've had to learn over years how to kind of learn how to vent like a healthy volcano, you know, if that makes sense. So, you know, because it's when the volcanoes get blocked up and they don't vent, that's when they blow up and you have what's the one that blew up? It was like Mount St. Helena or something like that. But stupid situations where I let my own emotions get in front of me. But there have been genuine nightmare gigs when it's just been everything out of our control going wrong. And there was a a relatively recent one where basically.
Is this with the promoter who shall not be named?
No. This is
my least favorite promoter.
No, not the one which we've spoken about in the past. No, not them. This is if that's who you're referencing to.
Almost certainly. There's only one promoter that I'm I'm down on.
Is it less of a promoter and more of a promotion company? Maybe.
Yes, let's describe it like that. Yes, if anyone's genuinely curious about what I'm talking about, I'm very happy to talk to people on a one-on-one basis and frankly to warn musicians about this particular company, but I'm not willing to publicize
it. If I'm going to throw that one out there, basically we had a gig, but this isn't anything to do with them being like at fault, to be honest, but we got to the gig. We never made it to the gig because of traffic and I don't know if I say the area of which it is too, makes it too obvious, but the traffic was so bad we never made it there, and it was so frustrating. And I was trying to sort out, like, is there any way we can shift around, because we're literally about a mile down the road but stuck in traffic. And the guy's just like, no, sorry, you gotta miss it. And you know, that's the way it is, it's the way it was. But I was pretty bummed, you know, to say the least.
I mean, to be fair, you made them sound very reasonable in a way, but they are a very unreasonable promoter for lots of other reasons.
Oh, they are. Yeah, they are. Yeah. No, what's the other thing? So basically, we had a gig a couple of years ago. It's an outdoor gig in the local town centre. And I thought it'd be fun to do that, so we did it. Basically, first of all, if I list off the issues, my voice was in a very, very bad state for some reason. I don't know why, but I was having a lot of issues. So I couldn't sing. It was blowing out really early. And the trouble is I was in a particular frame of mind when it was just causing a bit of a downward spiral. What happened next? My amp blew up. So I run a stereo rig and the super lead blew up. So you get this overwhelming smell of like burnt toast. Which you're thinking, or rotten fish. And I think, oh, it's just a valve that went. No, it turns out the output transformer blew up.
Right. A bit more serious.
Yeah, a little bit more serious. That goes down another story where in a minute, which I'll get onto in a second, because basically I could have killed myself. unintentionally, basically. But on this gig particularly, what was it? So we had voice not working, amp blew up. At the start of the set, had a bit of a wire malfunction where something wasn't connected properly. So we're faffing around for 10 minutes trying to find this cable, which wasn't doing what it should have done. And then eventually found it. But that trouble, so I went to panic mode from there. So immediately I was a bit set off. The trouble is, because it was around COVID time, I wasn't in a slick, warmed up mindset of how to deal with these situations again. That's why you need to do warm up gigs if you go on a tour, because you need to get yourself like, okay, I'm rolling with it now. It's not necessarily like warming up for football. It's warming up your brain so you think more efficiently when faced with issues. And we won. And because of that, it showed massively. Yeah, so there's the cable malfunction at the start, voice not working, amp blew up, and then it started to rain. Or did the rain come before? I can't remember, either one of them. And then after the rain, we had an angry woman who came up to us and started shouting at us and saying, it's too loud. I can hear it thumping through my window in my flat down the road. You need to turn the bass down. And I was trying to say to her, you need to go and talk to the sound man, because the sound man is the person who handles the sound.
He's in charge of the volume.
But she didn't understand what I meant, or she didn't choose to accept what I meant, I don't think she actually heard what I said, even though I was saying it very directly to her face. So she kept having a go at me, to which I got annoyed, to say the least, and I just said, you know, you can basically go away and I will carry on playing. And then she went over to the bass guitarist, Ivesy, who's the most tame person you'll ever meet, and she started having a go at him. And he was just a bit like, eventually, the guy who was throwing the show did come over and directed her off the scene. But I was sort of thinking, why didn't he do that before? Which was slightly annoying. But anyway, that was that happened. What else happened? Yeah, I think there was there anything else that happened? No, so it was the cable malfunction, the rain, the amp blown up, the angry woman.
And your voice is gone.
Oh, the voice gone, yeah. And then the resulting incident of the amp blowing up, basically I took it to someone to get it fixed, who I thought I trusted through having been recommended. It wasn't the usual person I take it to because he was ill at the time and I couldn't take it to him. Mick Johnson, very, very, very awesome person. If you live in the Berkshire area, legendary guitar maker. He's just amazing. he made an acoustic guitar. He's freaking awesome. But it wasn't him. He's who I would have taken my amp to, but I needed the amp quite quickly. So I took it to someone else I thought I could trust. And he ended up wiring it in such a way, after repairing it, after fitting the output transformer, that basically if something happened, it could have sent like 1,000 volts up my guitar cable and blown me across the room or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty much. And then it is. I mean, like, you know, when you feel the most alive is when you're that close to death, that kind of thing. I had no idea. Because I remember picking up the amp and he was explaining to me about something, about what he did. And I was thinking, I don't really know what you're talking about because I'm not an amp technician. I just plug in guitar and play amp. I'm guitar player. Like, I'm not amp technician. I understand to an extent about what valves are and stuff like that, but nitty-gritty stuff, I have no idea. Which is why I don't deal with that stuff. So I kept having issues with this amp afterwards. I kept fuses kept going and stuff like that, and I was like, this is just ridiculous. This has been my most reliable amp for the past 5 years or 6 years or however long I had it for that time. For 21 it was. So yeah, I got it in 2015, so 6 years old. Hadn't had any issues with it, and suddenly it had issues constantly. Anyway, I thought, okay, game over. I'm going to take it to get it sent back to Marshall. And sent it back to Marshall, and the guy opened it up. He called me straight away and said, I'm not plugging this in or doing anything until I've completely rewired this, because it's been an absolute bodge job. He's cut some like fuse wires and stuff like that, and basically if he touched it, he would have been blown across the room. And I'm thinking, okay, that's slightly unnerving, but it explains why it has issues. Anyway, to cut the long story short, now the amp is working absolutely fine. I haven't had any issues with it since, which is great, because yeah. But yeah, that was probably the most nightmare gig we've had, because everything at once went wrong. And then I had a hefty repair bill for the amp afterwards, and about half a year of wondering what the hell was going on with it as well.
But you're still alive, so that's a win.
But I'm still alive, yeah. In which that period, I could have probably died if something had gone wrong. So, yeah.
yeah. So my final question for you, as such, is: what is your best piece of advice for bands nowadays? Deliberately a wide open, broad question.
Don't overcomplicate matters. Try not to have too many chefs in one room. Just get stuff done. You know, don't be one of those bands who goes and records something and and I'm saying this from having produced some bands as well who are in that early stage, and they want absolute perfection for an extremely tight budget. And, you know, you have to accept that if you're paying a limited budget for something, you're not going to get something which sounds like it was recorded in Sound City Studios. So take the decent recording for the budget you played for, which is probably very good for the budget, put it out there, and then start building your budget for something bigger that you can spend a bit more time on, be more prepared for, and put a PR budget behind it. Because there's no point in getting that hung up about how much reverb you've got on your vocals or how much delay you've got on your guitar if the only people that are going to hear it are probably your mum, your dad, your dog, and a few of your mates and some people who go to gigs. If you're not going to put a massive PR budget behind it, that is realistically the people who are going to hear it. So, you know, just to be very brutally honest there. So get your priorities straight. Don't mess about too much. Get stuff done. You know, get something out there so you have something out there, your demo EP, and then build up your budget, your focus, and get something properly down where you can actually properly promote it and be a little bit more kind of specific on things about, if that makes any sense.
Cool. So to close out the podcast, I'd like to ask for your favourite song from your, I'm going to say probably your current band, is probably what you're going to go with, Crooked Shapes, to play at the end of the podcast. So which song is it and why?
I'd say probably Fire. It's probably like the best one to throw out there, which we've currently got out. It's just a solid punch in your face song, which kind of gets across the point of what we are, really. So yeah, I'd recommend that one, Fire. It's on YouTube, it's on all the stuff as well, so there's a music video for it, you can hear it, but yeah.
Nice. Well, this is Crooked Shapes with Fire. George, it's been great to talk with you.
Yeah, you too, man.